So, got another one here. Walk the dinosaur. Get on the floor. Everybody walk the dinosaur.
Now you're naming songs you haven't heard. We're done. it was a good segment about dancing songs. Welcome to Tune Change,
a show where two music jerks try to give albums a chance.
All right, welcome to Tune Change. We are talking about an album that neither merits nor rewards repeat or close listens, but I kind of liked it. Matt, it's Chic with Say Chic.
This was an interesting record. We've had it on the list for a while, and I think we've kind of been circling. We've came close a few times, and finally landed on it. It's very much a disco record. You know, we kind of knew what we were going into, but I think you're spot on with maybe that bit of ambivalence or it's a puzzling record for me in some ways.
I was very conscious that I was listening to it wrong, similar to when we listened to Techno, the new dance sound of Detroit.
Yeah,
it was like
yes.
I mean, some of these songs are fucking 7 minutes long. It's depraved
yes.
for the ballad. The ballad is 7 minutes long, and that's a crime. But the dance songs, I get it. But this record is like the first 30 seconds of the Daft Punk song where you're like, the song's about to start. and it just, sometimes it does, and a lot of times it just doesn't. I think it's noteworthy that their best song just like starts with the hook and then bangs you over the head with it over and over again. Most of the record is not Les Freak. Most of the record is like this slow burn. Like, you know, the first 2 minutes of Papa Was a Rolling Stone. They like, if that was the song? That's what some of these songs are.
Would you classify it as Quiet Storm?
Because I wouldn't classify anything that way ever.
Well, I think Quiet Storm is an established kind of shorthand for slow R&B that is very kind of atmospheric and brooding or moody in the way that some of these songs sort of are, but aren't quite.
I still think it's fair because the question was, would I rate it that way? And like, I sure wouldn't.
So I think even before we, you know, would have free, you know, I think even before we would have been watching a lot of VH1, you've heard Le Freak. You know, it's the Chic song. Perhaps the other one, I think, being Good Times, or that's 1 and 1A, right? For Chic.
I mean, they're one of those bands that, like, I'm sure I've heard other songs. I wouldn't know if it was them or like the Commodores or like some other disco song or I mean, Nile Rodgers was also producing a bunch of other disco acts, so they like consciously sounded the same, and he like played guitar on a lot of them, so he was like actually present much of the time.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe I relate this song to Brick House or the song Les Freak to Brick House because it was on the like TV commercial compilations where they would play
the beginning of
Les Freak and then they would
whatever Time Life compilation, you know, sounds of the 70s,
which as we've joked before is our show. It is just a scrolling list of like, hey, there was another, and there was a different song. So we've fit and started like six times. So I don't know if we've brought up how explicitly we've brought up VH1, but, the main way we know Le Freak is speaking of what we knew and when we knew it.
What did the president know? And when did he know it?
The main way we knew Nile Rodgers is him in that hat and those little glasses on VH1
yes.
talking about whatever VH1 was talking. Like, he was one of the most ubiquitous talking heads. He was always there.
For 25 years, you know, it's... for that period, if you were to, you know, happen upon VH1, there's a, you know, there's maybe a 3% chance that Nile Rodgers would be on the screen.
40 seems high, but it was a lot. I feel like his opinion was it was crazy. Like, that was, it was often what he had to say about the situation at hand. He was like, And it
Studio 54.
It could be like, man, Studio 54 was crazy. Or it could be like, man, the LA riots were crazy. Or it could be like, man, the Challenger explosion was crazy. Like, he had the same reaction to everything. Did you know I was due to be born on the day the Challenger exploded?
I didn't know that.
But my mom told me that like a bunch of times growing up. It's cool.
what a wild thing to
I knew that like definitely before I had a learner's permit. I knew that.
I just don't know what you're supposed to do with that piece of information.
I mean, I'll
ruminate upon it.
It's all the only thing you can ever do, Matt. You just got to pray on it.
Precisely.
So Nile Rodgers, as we mentioned, produced everything. We mentioned how fucking sick this bassist is a little bit, but he also produced.
Yes.
And he is a goddamn, he's a good bassist. We're going to talk about him a bunch when we get to the specific track.
Yes.
But holy fucking shit. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. He's the best, like, yeah, he's the takeaway standout, you know, holy crap, I didn't really know about this guy, and I'm glad to have found out about him.
I mean, the whole band, let's just talk about the band now, and then we can get into our production notes, but the whole band is damn good. Like, unsurprisingly, the rhythm section is just tight as hell. They're a disco act. And like a big disco act, so of course they are. It's carried by Bernie the bassist, though. Bernie the bassist is the whole deal. If you have some, replacement level bassist, this is dog shit. Nobody likes this.
I think you're spot on with that. And you know, it makes sense that this is a band formed by studio musicians. You know, Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards had been playing for, you know, the better part of a decade as studio acts and put this together. one other place that I'd seen Nile Rodgers, and I guess one more note on both of their production was he was also a David Bowie producer, which I had heard and was, you know, was excited about coming to this. This is what I was going to say. You mentioned or you used the word band, and they very much are a band, and a lot of these arrangements they sound, you know, they sound full, but there's less there than you'd maybe think. You know, there are strings, there are synths, but that primary rhythm section of the bass, the drums, and that plinky plunky Nile Rodgers guitar rhythm is the heart of this sound, and really of, you know, like when you think of disco, this is what you think of.
Yeah, it's the main thing that I think of with this production is dry. Like, it sounds great, but it's very dry. I think everything individually sounds very, very good. The places that aren't dry are like the ballads, and we'll get to it, but you can just throw the ballads away. What I am talking about is the record, which is the disco songs, the like faster songs. I think the specifically the kick drum, we don't talk about kick drums very much. The kick drum especially sounds really good. It's got the kind of like velvety kind of head sound. It's kind of a softer, kind of thumpy attack. I really like that, especially in
yeah.
in dance music.
Yeah, it's really organic when, and then you mate that to the it's a very, it's 4/4 or it's 4 on the floor, but then you have that organic roundness and fullness to that kick, and it again, like with the bass playing, takes it from good but kind of forgettable music to, hey, this is actually, pretty enjoyable and well done. I thought the drums were forward in this. A lot of hi-hats and a lot of snare in the mix for me.
I thought the hi-hat sounded good, though. I thought it was... It never gets totally closed, and I think that's dude needs a raise or a break or something. These songs are long, and he's just like this. There's a reason they just plugged a drum machine in later. He's playing the same goddamn thing for 6 minutes.
Anything else to get into on Production Junction before we take a look at the tracks?
No, it's kind of a transition into the songs themselves. But I apologize to all the bands that we said had nothing to say. Because no one has ever had nothing to say like this record. It's just like it's all like ooh yeahs and oh mamas and shake it boogie woogies. There's nothing. It's not the point, but it's
my personal favorite being Everybody Strut.
It's meant to either be chanted or ignored. That's it.
Yes.
So it's they're forgettable in kind of a good way, but that's what makes the ballads mystifying, because you kind of have to focus on the words. We'll talk about the song about not being able to see your face or whatever. it sucks. So let's go through the album list real quick. Not so we can talk about their like discography, but because I'm going to get to a specific point. So they start with Chic, then they've got Say Chic, then they've got Risque, mm-hmm. and then they've got Real People, Take It Off, and then Tongue in Chic.
Saw that as well.
Ew. Ew. Like, putting your tongue in someone is incredibly intimate, Chic. Incredibly intimate. Very forward indeed, I would say, Matt. Tongue in Chic. Well, yeah, my note is just ew. Look, I understand why it's on the list of possible album titles. You just can't pick it because it's gross.
Right. Yeah. You're
an idiot if you don't list it. You just can't pick it.
That's bullseye.
So are we ready to get into the track by track?
I think so. I was going to ask you about Chic Cheer. Is the piano and the guitar, are they doubling the riff at the very beginning? I have listened closely, and I can't tell if they are, but we've alluded to, and perhaps this is this is a good time as any to get into it. The guitar tone on this is very distinctive, and I will come right out of the gate saying, while I have, criticized rightly, I believe, this guitar tone in many other cases, I think it works here. I like it. I think it sounds good.
He's allowed. Like, it's his whole fucking thing. It does work here. It would be worse. Like, a different... He cares so much about the percussive aspect, especially when the strings are muted, that he just has different rules than everybody else. We should... we can talk about his guitar work in general. I want to talk about it even more on the third track that you get to try to pronounce. he's got such a distinctive kind of the loose seeming quality to the guitar is a total illusion. Like, it's so tight, but when you watch him play, he's just kind of jiggling his wrist, but he is hitting very precise strings and muting very precise strings around all these chords all the time. Like, I was fucking around with it before we started the call, and it's fucking hard. It's deceptively difficult because he's playing these little double stops on different strings. So these little two note chords on different strings, but it matters a lot if you get an extra string in there when you've only got two notes. So he's incredibly precise. Well, and so, yeah, he's allowed. He's like as good as you can possibly be at using this guitar tone. He is he's who everybody who does this is trying to sound like.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know the answer to your question about whether they're doubling the guitar and the piano. I wasn't paying attention to that. My main thought on Chic Shear is that the intro is fucking great, and I am excited for it to start.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of what made me, what really perked my ears up about that piano guitar question is, you know, boy, that sounds interesting, you know. Is that a guitar that sounds like a piano? Is it a piano and a guitar? They come in with, you know, the piano does some kind of chording and more, not drone, but a lot less percussive and busy work, you know, as it kind of kicks in. But I think it's a strong open, you know, it very much has that dance beat, and it's very propulsive and makes you feel like, you know, even if you're just in the car or something, it really moves. We're going to be saying it all episode, but the bass line is just, it's much like Nile Rodgers. It's very precise. It's very melodic and it moves around a lot. And there's a lot of intention in it, but it sounds, and to watch him play it, it just sounds like it's just kind of falling out and, you know, almost like a liquid pouring out, of the sound.
Yeah. What I meant by it's a good intro and I'm excited for it to start, that's my review of the entire song. Is what I meant. It just never quite gets to the song part. I was confused. They chanted at me at one point. Yeah. This is where I got the indication of like, oh, I'm just like not listening to it like you're supposed to. Like, you're supposed to be in a big room of sweaty people. You're not supposed to be. You're not. It's like I've heard people say about the people with their Marvel movies. It's like, you're not supposed to pay attention to it like this. Like, you're not.
Yeah.
It's not for that.
Right. You're doing it wrong.
Yeah. You're not supposed to listen to Chic Shear like closely and just do that. It's
right.
It's, you gotta have something.
It's not what that's
else,
for.
Something else going on. You gotta, there needs to be something solid. Worth propelling, right? If it's just propulsive, and you're just fucking sitting there, you know, you're not going anywhere. It can feel propulsive if you want. Yeah. So, I mean, rightly, I mean, whatever this song was, if they put it in front, they can't put Le Freak first, right? Because then their record is the maxi single of Les Freaks. but so they got to put something before, and nothing is gonna, what are you gonna fucking do, right? Nothing's gonna be,
yeah,
it's obviously your,
it's
best
great
song. So this has actual verses and a chorus and everything, and like,
right,
yeah, it's fucking great. It's, what can you say, it's fucking great. One, two,
emotion of the, you know, kind of the buoyancy and the, there's a lot of I guess there's a lot of joy here, I would say.
We haven't talked about what the VH1 like constant,
yeah,
story actually, like the reason he was generally on VH1 all the time was he was just constantly telling the story about how they wanted to get into Studio 54. Studio 54, you would have thought, was the library at Alexandria as far as VH1 was concerned. They were like, I can't believe it was destroyed. What did humanity do? So much was lost that day. It was a dance club that where a bunch of really, really awful things happened.
Yeah, it's a horrible place, I'm sure. It's
like dark shit happened at Studio 54.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get in. Even Sheik couldn't get in. So,
well,
these fucking goofuses write a song about how fun it is to dance at Studio 54? Come on now.
I want to give Niall his due. The tale as he tells it is they were trying to get into Studio 54, and Sheik was being played inside Studio 54, and the bouncers wouldn't let them in, and they were like, but that's our music. And then they went home and they wrote Les Freaks, which whose original lyrics were, fuck you, Studio 54.
I thought it was fuck off. We agree on the fuck.
Yes. And that's the important thing. But Studio 54, man, I like, that's one of those things that, like, you know, as I get a little bit older, is that the kind of thing that's going to end up on the millennial Trivial Pursuit, or even, I mean, God, like, we are a generation removed from Studio 54. Is there an equivalent, you know, I feel like the era of the big club is really over.
I mean, for us, it never began, so I don't feel like we can possibly speak to whether it is over or not.
That's fair. And what I guess when I mean the big club, it's like, you know, a club that has cultural currency, you know, that spills over into things like movies and music, and you know, I guess maybe if somebody makes you know, a movie adaptation of Meet Me in the Bathroom or something, you know, maybe that'll that would be the equivalent, but it seems an order of magnitude, you know, less impactful. Les Freaks, it's great. I like the strings. I think this you know, when they bring the strings out, it really kind of adds a neat additional layer. I'm sure, you know, they did all the arranging, but it really comes together well.
Are all the strings real on this record?
I don't believe so. I think that there are that there is some synthesizers smattered around.
I thought so, because there's some of the stuff that just like a little too precise seeming for You know what I mean? Like, they're all playing perfectly in sync, and that's just, like, not how string quartets work, generally.
Yeah. Well, and some of it is even a little pitchy, I thought. I think it's on
that
the dreaded ballad.
That would track with a 1977 synthesizer. More
right,
so than,
exactly.
than a professional musician playing out of tune, which seems unlikely.
Right.
So, how do you... Hey, give this next song a shot.
Okay. Savoir Fairy. Fairy? Spelled S-A-V-O-I-R-F-A-I-R-E. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, we're going to talk about the in-between strap position. If you don't know what that is, that's okay. Nile Rodgers is a real fucking good guitarist.
Yes.
Holy shit. So this is a 4-minute guitar solo, this song, basically. It's really enjoyable. It's a 4-minute guitar solo that I don't usually like, and a guitar tone I don't usually like, and liked it quite a bit.
I wasn't sure where you were going to come down, and I'm delighted to find out that you like it, because I like it very much as well. This is where you get some of those synthesizers, but Nile Rodgers is fantastic. We've kind of proposed a general rule that for the most part, a good guitar solo is being marked by being able to sing it. And, you know, it's a 3-minute, 4-minute guitar solo. You can't sing the whole thing. And it's not exactly the kind of a guitar solo that you can sing, but there is still phrases and, you know, kind of like little runs that he will move around the scale that you can think back to and stay with that are really good. It's a really, you know, virtuosic, little thing to drop in.
Yeah. He does these little, he loves this little like raked, arpeggio, thing. He's super clean. Which is easier when you play super clean, like he does. Like, I think you plug him into like super duper high gain and his noise control might be different, but for the way he plays, he's crazy clean. There's never anything out of place, but he's not robotic. His dynamics are phenomenal, and that's another thing that's like, when you play clean, you can have extreme dynamic ranges because nothing's compressed, and he uses all of that.
Right. Well, and, you know, I think I've mentioned this this Hendrix quote before, but he was talking about Clapton, and he says, oh, he doesn't play any rhythm, man. And, you know, Nile Rodgers, definitely a rhythm guitar player, but like Hendrix, he's also very conscious rhythmically in his soloing. In a way that lends itself to those dynamics that we were talking about. You know, he's very, very precise with rhythm, but very varied and, you know, just lots of really interesting, you know, triplets and little turns of rhythm that make a 4-minute guitar solo, you know, a really good listening experience.
I think one thing he does with rhythm a bunch is he will put the beginning of a little note run in an uncommon place so that the beat accent is on kind of a weird note of the little note run. Like, he'll emphasize an unexpected note in a little arpeggio by putting a beat in the middle of the arpeggio where you wouldn't necessarily expect it. So you kind of get like a double beat out of it because you get in the middle, and every time it crescendos, that feels like an accent too. So he's also, his pick attack is usually crazy strong. He is, you hear it better on a later song, but when he is like really digging in, he is like really thick into the strings. It's great. It plays more into the dynamic stuff we were talking about.
I wonder what gauge he plays.
I don't know. This guitar tone, this is the in-between strap position, but this is the good version. This is, it's thickened up. It's not, it seems to me like a in-between, neck and middle, and not a in-between, bridge and middle.
Yes.
Which is better, and it seems like this is thickened up somehow. Probably with a little bit of overdrive on it, but it sounds really, really, really good.
No, I was. This is probably my favorite one that I found. You know, one that I didn't know coming in. Was that?
It's one of the three best on the record for me. I think. It's gonna be a while before we say that again. Up next is Happy Man, a song that imagines a fantasy world where male happiness is a net positive for the world.
Oh, what a world that would be. I have one note here. This is what a couple of these songs remind me of. It's a pop song, but that's really about all I can say about it. Direct quote from my notes.
Slides right off the old brain. Yeah.
Lyrics are dumb. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, not the point. I'm a happy man. I mean, he does seem happy. I'll give him that. Also, the guitar tone is now ice picky. Like, this is where you can feel like, sometimes his pick attack is like a little much. Here actually the first time I had like ice pick vibes or ice pick, like had that specific reaction to a strap being played was your high school band. Cause y'all had a bunch of strats and a bunch of way too big cabinets that you did not know how to dial in.
We really didn't.
That's the first time. Yeah, I remember it was one of y'all had played once. It was at billiards, and I was like, oh, fuck. Ouch.
Ruining hearing since 2003.
Happy Man, don't listen to it, but if you do listen to it, it's okay. You won't remember a thing. Next is I Want Your Love, which is kind of similar but is saved by the bass line. I kind of hate everything else, but I really like the bass line, and that's enough to get it over. And there must have been so many samples off this record.
Oh, that my were God. Used all the time. This was another single. I think of you and I dream of you all of the time. What am I going to do?
I want your love. I want your love. You know, I think the melody is good. I think the little dropped beat with the I want your love. I hate that, I specifically hate that. It was my least favorite part of the whole song. That was what the bass line had to save. I also like the doubled like stare hard panned like pick scratchy like rhythm thing.
I had the exact same thing in my notes. Yeah. It does sound good. I was listening. I was like, ooh, doubled. It's stereo.
Yeah, they should have done that. Yeah, I was like, oh, they should do this all the time, which is why I shouldn't be a producer, because I was like... yeah, but I have written in my notes, I really hate the extra beat before your love in the chorus. Really hate it.
This one probably goes a little long. I'm sure it's longer than Lafreak.
You're not supposed to listen to the whole thing, like sitting down.
Yeah, that's
you're not
true.
You ain't supposed to. It's supposed to be like mixed and sampled and lengthened and danced to, and they're dance tracks. Like, you don't want to have to change the record every 5 seconds, and like everybody's I don't know, everybody's so sweaty they barely notice.
It's Studio 54. There's cocaine to do.
Well, Studio 54, if we're lucky, like maybe we won't even get into the drug den.
Have to write a song about it.
Now we're at the bottom. At last, I am free. I thought we were dancing, Matt. Thought we were dancing.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
My note here is dreamy, but not compelling. It's
hell no. It's like dreaming about going to work.
You were talking about not being dry. Yeah, it's kind of a wet blanket of a song.
This song is 7 minutes long. That is depraved. Why would you do that?
And it's one thing if it was, 110 beats a minute and you're looping it for to queue up your next
speed
your next
the fuck
side,
up.
But
speed the fuck up. What are you doing?
Or maybe write a bridge. I don't know.
Sing me a song. Something with no bridge, with no compelling hook. I recall like always thinking the bass was nice, but I couldn't hum it for you. I thought we was dancing.
If your whole song's gonna be a hook, it better be a good hook, and this is not.
Yeah, see, and you they can do it. They didn't do it. They made a ballad and they asked people to focus on their least compelling or usually absent elements. Like, if you're a band where everyone's like, man, I don't care if they sang at all on this record, then you shouldn't have ballads. Well, it's not for you anymore. Like, Santana didn't break out ballads. Like, they were all,
right.
They were always,
yes.
They're always Latin jazz rocking. But anyway, right. Sometimes you win, which I think is a neat little sentiment. Who is this man singing this song?
I have not confirmed that. I actually kind of like this one. I think it's fun. I like the kind of male female trading off vocals.
I think it's I Want Your Love Without a Cool Bass Line. I just thought it was nothing special.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly not on par with Chic Cheer or Lefreak.
To say something positive about it, I think this is the best the piano sounds. Like, the piano sounds great. So good. Hey, good for real good producers. What have we been saying? They can record. I mean, I don't know how much they like engineered the record. So if they were producers in the sense that they were the people who had the idea to like put people just talking over Funny Bone, then I don't think they did a good job. If they had a say over like, hey, here's how to capture the piano accurately. Now I think we're onto something, you know? Now I respect it. What I'm basically saying is that recording engineers do all the work. Producers, I think with that Mike Patton quote that we found about if you need producers, then you just shouldn't be making music because you don't have ideas. I think that's accurate.
and that's especially true for Rick Rubin. Just off the internet ticker here, Bernard Edwards lead vocals on Sometimes You Win, and he was the happy man.
Great. This is the we're on to Funny Bone, I think. This is the weirdest parenthetical ever. It's parentheses funny bone. So you could just call it Bone.
I remember thinking this is fine.
This was in my top three. This was one of the three I was talking about. That's why I said it was going to be a while before we got to three. I think this bass line is undeniable.
Oh yeah, no, the bass line for sure is a standout.
Undeniable bass line. Fast tempo. Nobody singing. I'm in.
No, that's
I'm in.
That's the move.
Just one more thing. Remember, the whole world's a circus. Don't you be the clown. Cha!
How do we feel about the vocal outro?
It's weird. Terrible.
It was certainly kind of. Yeah, it kind of comes out of nowhere, and is, huh?
Well, not in the
good Built to Spill way, but the.
No, I think, and I even don't like the Built to Spill one that much, but I agree it's the best version that you can have. I think it's just a bad concept. I think you should just never have someone start talking at the end of the record unless you're like a funny band, you know? You're like, we're weird guys. Chic is not, we're a bunch of weird guys. It's not Ween, right?
That's true.
I said, what is this voice at the end? Yikes. That's my opinion.
They're a very straight-laced band, you know, in their presentation. And I, you know, it kind of got me thinking about, like, there's a bit of a, maybe there's kind of this, well, all of the other disco acts that I can really think of, I mean, I guess there's some R&B acts that are more, you know, suit and tie acts, they're cleaner than a bar of soap. But you know, you see these videos, and you know, they're just wearing cocktail dresses and suits and ties and stuff. And
Wu-Tang Clan.
Whereas exactly.
What you want to hear?
I want to hear that Wu-Tang joint.
Wu-Tang again?
Again and again.
Whereas other kind of disco acts like Earth and Wind and Fire or, you know, Commodores, as you mentioned, you know, had big, gigantic, you know, the craziness of the visual component, you know, kind of, I think in some cases, you know, was meant to kind of prop up what may have been, you know.
I mean, I think what you're saying is music, like, but there's two kinds of disco bands. There's the ones with like five people, and there's the ones with like 17 people. There's the polyphonic spree, and then there's the regular ass bands where they've always got like way too many vocalists. That's the thing that they've all got, is they've all got like an equal number of vocalists as they make up for the total lack of ideas of what to sing with just like, well, we're going to have a lot of singers. Maybe they'll all tell you to boogie, woogie, woogie.
Just by the law of large numbers, you know, we'll come up with something here. But I mean, like I think this was a good, fun record. I mean, it's not, I don't feel compelled to specifically return to it. I don't know. Savion Fair.
I'm going to listen to that again for sure.
Yeah, we'll probably be repeated, but
you'll hear Le Freak whether you like it or not.
Yeah, there's no telling on that, but next time if I hear I Want Your Love, I'll be able to say, instead of saying, oh, I wonder who this is, I'll be able to say, oh, it's Chic.
I expect to never hear anything except Le Freak and Savoir Faire and whatever plays after Savoir Faire on accident, because it just auto-plays.
He's the happy man. So we've got a special segment, because one thing that I had not picked up on until listening to Le Freak was that Le Freak is it's a titular dance. You're being encouraged to do Le Freak. And that got me thinking, well, there's got to be some other songs.
It's a specific motion?
Well, I don't know that a motion is specified, but you are told to...
So I think we've got our first of what I imagine will be the entirety of this session, this segment. Does that count?
The segment titled "Land of 1,000 Songs About Dances." And yeah, let's get right to it. Does it count? Here's my argument that it does count. Amongst the lyrics is "It's called Le Freak. They're doing it night and day." So
strong evidence.
A dance exists. I don't know. It's not. I'm not seeing that it's specified in the song. It's a secret dance for which the instructions are being withheld, but it is a titular dance.
So it's not a dance you can do? This is...
I think it's left up to interpretation.
Well, then... No, you've got to, like, it's got to be a known thing. Like, is the Monster Mash on your list?
The Monster Mash is not on my list.
By your definition, the Monster Mash is fair game.
I mean, I think it
come
it's
on,
in the,
Matt.
It's in the
come
does
on
it
out
count
to the
discussion.
Dance floor and do the Monster Mash. That's not what we're talking about, dude. We're talking about Macarena shit. We're talking about, like, we're going to tell you how to do the dance. Watch me do this dance. I think... Here's my definition.
Okay.
We can agree to disagree. It's okay. It's fine if you want to put whatever the fucking song, any song ever written that you can dance to, it counts for Matt. So my working definition, I think it's got to be a dance you can actually do.
Okay.
I think the song has to be about the dance, or... you have to be specifically instructed to do the dance in the song. I was seeing some people online say Thriller, and that's bullshit.
Yeah, no. I saw that as well. I'm sure we were...
Now you're just ranking video choreography. That's not the same.
Yes. I don't care if, you know, if somebody got out and did the Macarena for, you know, for Halloween. Well, the Macarena does count, because it's... Though, are they telling you how to do it?
No. There's a video of dance. Them doing the dance, and it's there about the dance, and it's a dance you can do. So, I think a smoking gun is okay. No one would ever say, I saw some people doing the Thriller, right?
Right. Yes.
You would hear them say, I saw some people doing the dance from the Thriller video,
right?
Is for sure how you would describe it. So that's not the test, but if a song fails that test,
right,
it does not count. So I think to get the obvious one out of the way, Karma Police. Everybody was doing it. You'd put your hand in your nose. You remember Matt's doing it right now. Matt loved this. Matt used to get fucking hammered and do the Karma Police at parties. It was gross. Because it's a gross dance. It's really demeaning. Well, it's demeaning to the people. It's demeaning to the people who see it. It's demeaning to the person doing it for sure. I mean, there's urine.
It's like the lumbata. It's the forbidden dance.
Yeah. The song that is the most relevant to this record that I think clearly counts is The Hustle.
I had Hustle as well. Yeah, that's about the only lyric there is to do the hustle. So yeah, definitely counts. Just to kind of, you know, I think we can dispense with the wedding favorites in one shot here. We've got the Cupid Shuffle. We've got the cha-cha slide and the electric slide, which I always remember hearing about but never hearing. I listened to it earlier, you know, in preparation for this, and I didn't
You've
recognize
heard
it.
It.
Yeah.
What? That's insane.
Yeah.
You've been to weddings. You've heard it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Much like some hammered. Of these Chic songs. That just
too hammered. all strung out after a round of karma policing. I have all of those lumped under all others. Bad. Mm. Okay. Why don't you name a few? Because you've got more than me. Because you're counting every song.
I've got a few. We'll dispense with the doesn't really counts. Real quick here. You know, YMCA. There's a dance, but you're not being told to do it.
What YMCA? Of course counts.
I suppose the request is inherent.
I think it's like, I mean, it is so ubiquitous that it's like, it would be silly if this person were not, it would be silly if this dance of all dances were not in the what's a famous song. With a singularly associated dance that you only do to this song. I understand your argument that it is a culture around the song rather than an inherent quality of the song. The song would be lesser if you removed the dance. Like the dance is so inherent
structural to the song that they're
one unit. And I don't feel like that's necessarily true for YMCA, because it's also a wildly popular song about getting laid at the YMCA.
About going down to the YMCA and getting blown.
It's pretty cool that it got. It's the corn rule. Hey, that's a weird thing they got on the radio.
I'm realizing talking about it that I don't know whether that was like, were the village people out there while doing, you know, performing the song?
Hell yeah.
Did they themselves initiate the dance? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. I have one that barely counts, but I think clearly counts by our rules. And that is Lean Back by Terror Squad and Fat Joe.
Oh, yeah. I think that counts for sure.
You are instructed to do the rockaway and lean back. Although, kind of paradox, they are not dancing. That is not what they are doing. And per one of the verses, they are also not boogieing, which would be devastating to Chic.
Oh, terrible.
Who often boogie.
And
sometimes woogie.
In a similar vein, apparently there was a dance to Soulja Boy. I am unaware of this dance.
Somebody found the same Reddit thread as me.
do we have thoughts on Soulja Boy?
I don't know the song. You remember the time he was like he had a show in Springfield and it got like crazy delayed and then I think got canceled or shut down or something. I may be making all of that,
that
up, but
that
I
sounds,
remember it being
that
like
sounds familiar.
Kind of a catastrophe.
My main memory of Soldier Boy is going when I worked for the vending company, going and fixing arcade games at the skate at the skating alley or the skating rink. You know, the olden skating alley.
It was
you could
a
only,
lot of,
you could only do,
a
go
lot
down
of
and
kids
back, no
got,
circle.
A lot of kids got badly hurt at the skating alley.
But
actually used quite a bit, that alley. Garbage trucks, big problem.
But they're playing Soldier Boy, and, you know, it's a bunch of, like, you know, tweens at the oldest, and I'm listening to this song and I'm realizing, oh, this song is filthy. Are they really playing this for these kids? But anyway, I don't know. So it doesn't count. What does count, however, is I got a twofer. We got the Humpty Hump and Tootsie Roll.
I can't believe we haven't mentioned it yet. I feel like it's the first one that popped into my head is the Twist.
Yeah, Twist is kind of the example of this. Yeah,
the Twist is pretty good.
Yeah,
it's he just kept making that song over and over and over again because it was that era of rock music of like, you're the Twist guy, you do different Twist things.
What's your next song? Twist Again. You got it. literally called Twist Again.
It's perfect for those times when you have already twisted. I don't know if you got to this part of the Reddit thread, but I believe it that Stand by REM was supposed to be one of these and it just failed.
Okay.
I believe it. I believe Michael Stipe tried to make a YMCA and it just didn't work.
Now Face North. No, I think that's viable. Just one more Chubby Checker moment. He actually had two, because he also had the Limbo.
There's
rock.
Twist. There's Twist. Oh yeah, and yeah. I thought you were talking about Twist. I thought you were talking about Twist again.
but no Twist again, but there is something called slow twisting, which sounds kind of unfortunate, but here's
seeing
one.
A lot of things featuring Twista. I don't see any Chubby Checker. I kind of want to make an argument for it just because I kind of like it is Boot Scootin' Boogie.
I have that on there as well, and I had an interesting thought because I was going, you know, thinking about, well, does it count? Are there steps? I'm sure people do line dance. I had to do some kind of line dance.
Ain't you just line dancing? Like, yeah. It's not a dedicated dance. That's the problem.
Here's my thinking though. I don't think it's the dance. I think it's the name of the bar. I think the bar is called the Boot Scootin' Boogie.
They got whiskey, women, music, and smoke. It's where all the cowboy folk go to Boot Scootin' Boogie.
this is some fan theory bullshit. There's no fucking way. The Boot Scootin'. That's implausible, Matt. A boogie is a dance. Well, have you learned nothing from Chic? The Boot Scootin' Boogie is the bar. What is your textual evidence, Matthew?
Well, they're talking about, you know, out in the country, you know, past the city limit sign, there's a honky tonk on the county line. You know, they're describing this honky tonk bar. I had not thought of this until like 6 o'clock tonight, and the more I'm talking, I might. You know, it's head
no,
cannon, but
no,
I think
no,
it's
no,
solid.
No, 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 to, no, 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 no. Every look at every direct reference to Boot Scootin' Boogie. It's where all the cowboy folk go to Boot Scootin' Boogie. Last line of the second verse. Stuck out in the woods, to do the boot scootin' boogie.
Yeah, okay. To do the boot scootin' boogie. That's it. Yeah, you know what? You're right.
Yeah. Third verse, all out, making it shake, doing the boot scootin' boogie.
Mm.
We're gonna boogie. Yeah, you're getting lost in the go-to-town boot scootin' boogie, but there's no... There's just no textual evidence for what you're suggesting, yeah. Matt. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Denied.
I thought we were going to have a whole big banter. I'm as disappointed as you. I was really excited for the theory because I thought we were going to have a lively debate where I was like, I can't prove you wrong, but it's obviously fucking stupid and wrong. is what I was going to be basically saying. So it's cool that I don't have to do that now.
Close reading, also includes reading to the third verse.
or the end of the first one.
Similar, we got the Watermelon Crawl, that Alan Jackson song. I think that... they're being told to do it, but not being told how or it's being proposed as an alternative to drunk driving, which I always thought was strange. But
of course,
remember Watermelon Crawl.
I it's ringing bells now, but it's not bringing up a lot of like fond emotional memories.
Yeah,
for me. Of course, there's a courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue, with the dance where you put a boot in your ass.
Oh, God.
May he rest in peace.
Oh, man.
They got whiskey, women, music, and smoke.
The Cadillac right. Blackjack line is you know, that bought Brooks and Dunn done their houses.
Who could spit?
We got The Bird by Morris Day and the Time.
No, we're done. We're not doing more dances. You're looking shit up on Wikipedia. We're done.
That was on my notes, but all right. The land of 30 dances.
You didn't find it in time. That's we've been done for several minutes.
All right.
Well, we already know what we're doing next time.
To reestablish the parameters, Brett's going to listen to Blue by Joni Mitchell.
Fantastic. And Matt's going to listen to Ween. The Mollusk. It's the most consistent Ween.
I'm pretty pumped. Ween's been a big...
Because I gave you a good thing, and you gave me fucking Joni Mitchell.
I hope you like it. I think it's great. We're gonna find out.
I like parking lots.
but we'll get into it. but we will get into it next time on Tune Change. Where the tunes change and the people basically
don't steal my shit. Don't steal my shit. Do your shit. Do your own shit.
Dear listener, wherever you find yourself, thank you for listening. We hope that you join us next time for Solstice Santa, where we know which tasks we've been assigned. Until then, don't forget to listen to music.
Matt, are you said my thing? I'm protesting. Goodbye.
Just one more thing. Remember, the whole world's a circus. Don't you be the clown. Tcha!
Pasting just got easier. Thanks, Word. So, it's awesome. It's great. I'm excited about pasting. I didn't see how it got easier. I closed the windows as fast as I possibly could.